Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we will be reading more from the ELM. I'm trying to get through as much of this as I can because I'm very excited about what's coming next. I am going to be going to the National Convention in Boston. And so hopefully if you guys are there, you come and say hi. Please don't be shy about saying hello to me. I will make myself available as much as possible, and I would love to talk to everybody who listens and a bunch of people who don't listen. So please, please find me. Please say hello. I have no idea where I'm going to be. This will be my first national convention, and I didn't even know I could go. It turns out I am going to be a guest because I missed the deadline, but I got an invitation that was too good to resist. So I will be there. I just won't be on the floor. I'll have to be back in the guest area, at least on the main convention floor. But of course, I'll be attending as many classes as I can, and I will see you guys around. All right, so let's go ahead and get to it. ELM 820, Reports and Investigations, Program Evaluations, and Inspections. So this section is going to go over like what the post office is supposed to do and what their obligations are if somebody gets injured on the job or has like workplace injury or illness. 821, Actions in the Event of Accident, Injury, or Illness. 821.1, Injury, Illness, and Accident Reporting. 821.11, Postal Service and OSHA Reporting and Record Keeping Requirements. The Postal Service is required by 29 CFR 1904, Recording and Reporting Occupational Injuries and Illnesses, to use the following to record occupational injuries and illnesses. A. OSHA Form 300, Log of Work-Related Injuries and Illnesses. B. OSHA Form 300A, Summary of Work-Related Injuries and Illnesses. And C. OSHA Form 301, Injury and Illness Incident Report, or D, equivalent forms. The PS Form 1769/301 Accident Report generated by EHS is equivalent to the OSHA Form 301. 821.122, OSHA Requirements. So guys, the post office has to follow these OSHA requirements or they get in big trouble. So you want to make sure that your station is doing this. In accordance with OSHA Part 1904, OSHA Form 301 must be completed for each recordable injury or illness. The PS Form 1769/301 accident report must be maintained along with the OSHA 300 log for 5 years. 821.123, Postal System for Accident Reporting. An accident report must be entered into EHS by the supervisor when any one of the following occurs. So again, guys, if you have a carrier who has been injured on the job, had a workplace injury, workplace illness, something like that, and maybe they're trying to discipline the carrier for getting hurt on the job, well, then you want to see these reports. You want to see what management actually put into the system so that you can process your grievance or know, you know, what they're claiming happened. All right, so again, a report must be entered into the EHS when any of the following occurs. A, injury or illness of a Postal Service employee. The appropriate OSHA recordable indicator and Postal Service reportable status are automatically identified in the EHS system, which uses OSHA record-keeping guidelines to determine OSHA recordability and follows guidelines for Postal Service requirements. B. Death of a Postal Service employee on Postal Service premises or on the job, U.S. Department of Labor Form CA-5, claim for compensation by widow, widower, and or children, or CA-6, official supervisor's report of employee death, is generated from EHS and submitted to the Office of Workers' Compensation Programs. C. Injury or fatality to a non-Postal Service person on Postal Service premises. Unless a contractor is involved, this is not an OSHA recordable event. D. Motor vehicle accident that results in death, injury, or property damage, regardless of cost, who was injured, if anyone, or what property was damaged. E. Damage to Postal Service property or to property of customers or the general public, regardless of whether an injury was involved. And F. Fire damage to Postal Service property. 821.131, completing the accident report in EHS. The manager or supervisor of the employee or operation reports all accidents and occupational injuries and illnesses in EHS within 24 hours. So here we have this timeline. management has to abide by these timelines. I've certainly heard of managers and supervisors getting trouble with OSHA for not filling out these forms when they're supposed to fill them out. You know, I know almost nothing about what's supposed to happen if somebody has an on-the-job injury. And sadly, that seems to be the case with management as well. 821.141, OSHA 300, log of work-related injuries and illness. In accordance with 29 CFR 1904, each facility must maintain an OSHA 300 log by calendar year that lists all OSHA recordable occupational injuries and illnesses. All such injuries and illnesses must be recorded and maintained at the Employee Health and Safety, that's what EHS stands for, by the way, system for inclusion on the automated OSHA 300 log. 841.142, OSHA 300A, Summary of Work-Related Injuries and Illnesses. Print a copy of the OSHA Form 300A from EHS and post it for the period of February 1st through April 30th each year in a conspicuous place at every establishment where employees work or report to work. I really don't know how regularly management does this. You'd like to assume it's just something that automatically comes up on their to-do chart and they post it. But I don't know. If you're listening to this at some time between February 1st and April 30th of any year, look in conspicuous places and see if this is actually posted at your station. 821.143, OSHA 301, Injury and Illness Incident Report. OSHA Form 301 must be filled out for each OSHA recordable work-related injury or illness within 7 days of notification. PS Form 1769/301, generated by EHS, is equivalent to OSHA Form 301. 821.2, Accident Investigation. So here's stuff that may come up more frequently because management has to invest, like crashes. If somebody, you know, drives their LLV into a mailbox, or an LLV gets rear-ended or something like that, management has to investigate. 821.21, responsibility. Managers and supervisors are responsible for investigating all accidents promptly, determining their causes, and reporting them accurately in accordance with OSHA and Postal Service regulations. Management should consult with safety personnel when accident causes cannot be readily determined. 821.22, method. To have firsthand knowledge of every accident that occurs in their operation, supervisors must make thorough investigations that include at least the following. All right, so we have two important words in there. We have the word must, so this is not optional, and B, that include at least the following. So there are a number of bullet points here, and all of these have to be done at a minimum, and then probably more. A, interview employees to determine, one, what caused the accident, two, why it happened, and three, what the employees and supervisor think could have been done to prevent it. B, promptly inspect the accident site to determine what conditions, such as equipment and work practices, contributed to the accident. C, interview witnesses and coworkers. All right, so those are all the things they do to investigate. I'm going to add in here D, that is not listed, which is they have to inform the local union president. That is in Article 41 of the National Agreement that just came up where I work. We had two motor vehicle accidents that I'm aware of, probably more. And in fact, I know there were more. I just didn't investigate the other ones. But in neither of them was our local union president notified. So now I'll be filing a class action grievance to, you know, give management a slap on the wrist for that. That also denies our carriers due process, because part of the idea behind notifying the union is that the union could come out, also look at what happened, and provide a more objective investigation. So they're denying the union that right by not notifying anybody in the union that this accident has happened. I know most of the people listening to this are just employees, not union officers. This is why it's so important that you actually contact your union representative if you get into an accident, if you get injured, anything like that. All right, 821.3, accident analysis. 821.31, purpose. Accident analysis is vital for identifying the hazardous conditions, contributing factors, and root causes of accidents. 821.32, responsibility. Installation heads slash managers must use the results of accident analyses to address the causes of accidents, develop specific actions, and enter them into an accident reduction plan. The ARP, Accident Reduction Plan, serves as management's primary tool for reducing OSHA injury and illness and motor vehicle accident rates. 822.1, reporting serious accidents. 822.12, definition of a serious accident. A serious accident is defined by the Postal Service as any Postal Service-related occupational accident, illness, or disease that, A, you know what, before I read these, this is something that I've heard Corey talk about on From A to Arbitration, that when somebody gets into an accident, management tries to fire them. And there's a definition right here of what constitutes a serious accident. And if this was not a serious accident, then how can the Postal Service say that it's serious enough to be fired when by their own definition, it's not a serious accident? All right, so here are the criteria that make it a serious accident. A, results in the death of one or more employees or non-Postal Service persons. B, results in the inpatient hospitalization of one or more employees or non-Postal Service persons. C, results in the death of an employee or non-Postal Service person within 6 months of the date of the accident, even if it was not immediately reportable. D, involves property damage estimated to exceed $100,000. E, involves mutilation, amputation, or loss of vision in one or both eyes to an employee or non-Postal Service person. F, results in inpatient hospitalization due to chemical or biological exposure. And then after this, there's a bunch of instructions that cover how they're supposed to report these types of incidents within management and to OSHA. But the important thing here is that there are very specific guidelines for what constitutes a serious accident. And if the carrier just rear-ended somebody and, you know, nothing really happened except some vehicle damage, you're talking maybe $3,000 of damage, that is not serious by the post office's own definition. 823, program evaluation. 823.1, purpose. The purpose of routine safety and health program evaluation is to, A, measure the effectiveness of the Postal Service's safety and health program at each organizational level. B, ensure OSHA compliance. And C, promote a model for effective safety and health programs. And then after this, there's this huge list of a bunch of levels of management and who's responsible for different reports. And oh my God, it was so boring. You guys are so lucky that I'm reading all of this for you. I'm sure it's still boring even after cutting all this stuff out. But dude, man, this ELM was a slog. Ugh. All right, 824, safety and health inspections. 824.1, purpose. The purpose of a safety and health inspection is to target specific operations, facility, or program deficiencies that may cause accidents, injuries, and illnesses, and to foster compliance with OSHA regulations and standards. 824.2, methods. Safety personnel conducting inspections must be technically competent to recognize and evaluate hazards of the work environment and to suggest specific abatement procedures. They must use inspection checklists contained in the most current safety toolkit that reference current OSHA and other applicable regulations, standards, and Postal Service policies. 824.32, district and subordinate installations with 100 or more work years. 824.321, requirement. District and plant safety personnel must conduct a semi-annual inspection of all installations with 100 or more work years of employment in the regular workforce and enter their inspection findings into the safety toolkit. If headquarters or area conducts an inspection, if headquarters or the area conducts an inspection, it serves as one semi-annual inspection. 824.33, district and subordinate installations with less than 100 work years. 824.331, requirement. Collateral duty FSCs, I don't know what those are, supervisors maybe, must conduct an annual inspection of each installation with less than 100 work years of employment in the regular workforce. The FSC will conduct the inspection using instructions and an approved inspection checklist located in the safety toolkit or on the safety resources page. FSCs must enter inspection findings into the safety toolkit if they have access to a postal computer. District safety personnel provide the technical assistance and support as necessary. In addition, district safety personnel must visit facilities as necessary to verify results of inspections by the FSC and provide assistance. If district safety personnel perform an inspection, it serves as the annual inspection. 824.4, conduct of the inspections. 824.41, authority. Postal Service safety personnel are authorized A, to conduct inspections without delay. B, to have access to all available information relevant to the occupational safety and health of the workplace to be inspected, including, and then there's a bunch of relevant forms here. I'm not going to go over all the forms. C, to interview employees privately if necessary. D, to consult with a reasonable number of employees during the inspection if there are no authorized representatives of employees. E, to deny the right of accompaniment to any person whose participation interferes with a fair and orderly inspection. So it's important to remember, like, if you're one of these employees that they want to talk to, safety works in management. The people who are in safety are part of management, and they are not on your side. They are there to protect the post office. They're a lot like human resources. When you go to human resources with a problem, their number one priority is to protect the company, to stop the company from getting sued, to stop the company from getting tagged with labor violations, things like that. So they may also help you, but they are employed by the company, not by you. So be careful with the stuff you tell them. And then next, there's a bunch of policies here procedures for how to actually conduct the inspection. We're going to skip all that. 824.6, investigating employee reports of hazard, unsafe condition, or practice. 824.6, so this is how they're supposed to handle it when you report on a 1767. 824.61, purpose of PS Form 1767, report of hazard, unsafe condition, or practice. PS Form 1767 is designed to encourage employee participation in the Postal Service Safety and Health Program and to provide prompt action when employees report a hazard. This form provides a channel of communication between employees and management that promotes a prompt analysis and response with corrective action to reports of alleged hazards, unsafe conditions, or unsafe practices. 824.62, availability of form. Supervisors must maintain a supply of PS Forms 1767 in the workplace in a manner that provides employees with both easy and anonymous, if desired, access. All right, here's another must. If you don't see those 1767s, management's not doing what they are required to do. 824.63, procedures and responsibilities. 824.631, employee. Here are your responsibilities. Any employee or the representative of any employee, which would be a union steward, who believes that an unsafe or unhealthful condition exists in the workplace may do any or all of the following. A, file a report of the condition on PS Form 1767 with the immediate supervisor and request an inspection of the alleged condition. B, if the employee desires anonymity, hold on just a second. That is for me. And I'm back, and I don't remember exactly where I left off, so forgive me for repeating myself right now. 824.631. Okay, as the employee, and now Annie's scratching at the door. Okay, this time I'm going to remember where I was. Okay, I'm back again. I know it's just an instantaneous pause on your end, but if I get another interruption, I'm just going to power through it. 824.631, employee. Any employee or the representative of any employee who believes that an unsafe or unhealthful condition exists in the workplace may do any or all of the following. A, file a report of the condition on PS Form 1767 with the immediate supervisor and request an inspection of the alleged condition. B, if the employee desires anonymity, file PS Form 1767 directly with the installation safety personnel, who will immediately give the report to the employee's supervisor for necessary action. In such cases, safety personnel must not disclose the name of the individual making the report. C, report alleged unsafe conditions to a steward, if one is available, who may then discuss the condition with the employee's supervisor. Discrimination against an employee for reporting a safety and health hazard is unlawful. And on that note, there are also whistleblower protections from OSHA for reporting workplace accidents and safety issues. So one of the ways that workplace accidents get reported is when you get injured on the job and you have to tell management, hey, I was walking across this lawn, I turned my ankle, and I've become injured. And if management disciplines you for that injury, that sort of discipline has a chilling effect on people wanting to file reports when there are workplace injuries. And so that's something that OSHA is specifically trying to avoid. We don't want to have that chilling effect. We want employees to feel comfortable bringing reports of injury forward to management so that they can be reported properly. You know, imagine a steel mill where people were getting burned all the time by, like, you know, the big sparks that fly off when they work the steel. And they were discouraged by management. Like, anybody who reports getting hit by sparks is going to get a suspension. You can see why that would be a problem and why OSHA might take issue with that sort of policy. But we have the same sort of policy at the post office. Like, if you get injured on the job doing what the job requires, walking across the lawn, you get disciplined for it. So that's why these sort of whistleblower protections are in place. And to me, it's worth contacting OSHA in those type of situations. All right, 824.632, supervisor. The immediate supervisor must promptly, within the tour of duty, A, investigate the alleged condition, B, initiate immediate corrective action or make appropriate recommendations, C, record actions or recommendations on PS Form 1767, D, forward the original PS Form 1767 and one copy to the next level of management, the approving official. E, give the employee a copy signed by the supervisor as a receipt. And F, immediately forward the third copy to the facility safety coordinator. Guys, it is F that makes the 1767 so effective, because management has to write on there what it is they're doing about this safety issue. And they don't want to send up a report to their bosses that says, I'm ignoring this, or I'm just going to pretend like it doesn't exist. So the 1767 can be an effective way to get action on a safety issue. Continuing here, it is the supervisor's responsibility to monitor the status of the report at all times until the hazard is abated. If the hazard remains unabated longer than 7 calendar days, the supervisor must verbally inform the employee as to abatement status at the end of each 7-day interval. Guys, it says must. So if that safety issue doesn't get addressed, management has to keep reporting to you. Dude, how cool is that? Management is required to report to you every 7 days. That's awesome. All right, next. 824.663, approving official. The approving official, the responsible manager, must initiate action to eliminate or minimize the hazard. A, if this results in the submission of a work order, attach the original PS Form 1767 and forward it through channels to the manager of maintenance. B, if the approving official determines that there are no reasonable grounds to believe such a hazard exists, the employee must be notified in writing within 15 calendar days. Safety personnel must assist in this decision when requested. C, if the hazard was abated through actions of the approving official, 1, the employee must be notified in writing, and 2, the original PS Form 1767 with a statement of actions taken must be forwarded to the safety office. Next, we get to 825, which covers the procedures for OSHA inspections, and basically the whole section just says management has to be fully cooperative. 830, motor vehicle and industrial safety. I'm going to skip the industrial stuff. It's about like forklifts and pallet jacks and stuff like that. Most of that would apply to like mail handlers, but I will talk about the motor vehicle ones. 831, motor vehicle safety. 831.1, objective. The objective of the motor vehicle safety program is to comply with applicable U.S. Department of Transportation regulations, require safe driving, and reduce potential losses, human suffering, and property damage while maintaining the efficient delivery and collection of mail. The following handbooks provide policy and procedures for implementing an effective motor vehicle safety program. EL 801, Supervisor's Safety Handbook. EL 804, Safe Driver Program. EL 814, Employee's Guide to Safety. Incidentally, the manuals for how to set up the Carrier Academy say that every employee is supposed to receive an EL 814, Postal Employee's Guide to Safety. That is like a 60-page book that's all about safety. So I'm curious, at my installation, that was not done. People did not receive these EL 814s. It was one of the things that I complained about. So I'm curious if you recently went through the academy or if you teach at a Carrier Academy, are your students getting EL 814, Postal Employee's Guide to Safety? And then the last handbook is PO-701, Fleet Management. 831.2, Vehicle Maintenance. All installation heads and managers having motor vehicles under their control must develop and administer the controls necessary to ensure that the provisions outlined in Handbook PO-701 are followed. 831.3, Driver Selection, Training, and Supervision. 831.31, Driver Selection. Postal Service personnel responsible for hiring, testing, supervising, and providing medical services must ensure that only qualified applicants are hired and retained in driving positions. The determination of qualified is outlined in Handbook EL312, Employment and Placement. That might be a place to turn if I'm not familiar with this handbook, EL312, but if you're having an argument with management over whether a person should get their driving privileges back, I bet you that's a place you would go and look to see what the qualifications actually are. 831.32, driver training. The goal of all types of driver training is to develop and maintain safe drivers. The careful selection of personnel to act as driving instructors is essential to ensure proper attitude, enthusiasm, interest, and understanding of the subject matter. Additional information and policy requirements can be found in Handbooks EL 804 and EL 312. 831.33, Driver Suspension. Oh, no, Driver Supervision. 831.331, Supervisor's Responsibilities. Supervisors must ensure that drivers under their supervision drive safely, practice defensive driving, practice personal safety, obey all state and local traffic laws and Postal Service driving policies, and extend courtesy in all situations. 831.332, Driver's Responsibilities. Finally, it gets down to us. Drivers must A, drive safely and defensively, B, practice personal safety, C, obey all state and local traffic laws and Postal Service driving policies, D, extend courtesy in all situations, E, not use a cell phone while driving. Drivers must pull off the road to a safe location before using the phone. 831.4, Accident Analysis. Managers and supervisors must analyze driver observations, route layout, and vehicle accident data to determine potential hazards, contributing factors, and the root causes of accidents. They must also develop and implement countermeasures designed to prevent motor vehicle accidents at their installations. And then the rest of the 830s go over industrial level safety, and so we're going to skip that. And we are coming up on a half an hour. So I think I'm going to call it here. It looks like the 800s go on long enough that it's going to be another full episode. And then we will do the 900s, and then we will be done. Oh, dude. All right, thanks for sticking with me, guys, and getting through all of this. And we will keep powering through on the next episode.